Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Hello and welcome to Witch Bitches Review. I am the shapeshifter that got turned down for the role of Goblin King in Labyrinth for David Bowie and never quite recovered, Tyler Carson Evans.
And I'm your absent deadbeat dad who acts like your creepy ex-boyfriend, Siren Rex Neenan. This is the podcast where we analyze representations of witchcraft in media and popular culture, beginning with our in-depth review of the original Charmed series.
Today we're discussing Charmed episode 3 of season 1, Thank You for Not Morphing.
This title is a super lame reference to Thank You for Not Smoking, which you barely ever see anywhere anymore, but there were signs that said that all over the place back in 1998 when this episode aired. So I guess maybe they thought they were being clever when they were going for that. I don't know. But anyway, if you get it from the title, the episode is about shapeshifters, and they actually don't stop shapeshifting. So in that way, the title does not make sense.
This episode originally aired on October 21st, 1998. According to IMDb, this episode ranked 7.4 out of 10 and is the one where the sisters' fathers, they have two. Well, they do in the end.
They do. Yeah. It's a different kind of message. The Charmed ones have two daddies.
The sister's father returns after a 20-year absence, and evil neighbors who can change shape set out to steal the Book of Shadows.
This may actually be my least favorite episode of the show, but, you know, we've still gleaned a lot to talk about from it. There are two things that I want to hit right off the bat. I'm just going to open with this because I am going to be focusing on this through the entire episode of the podcast. This episode is a continuity dumpster fire.
Yes.
Like, it just really is. It not only has continuity issues with later episodes of this series, but it has continuity issues with itself. It's just a huge problem. And also, the Charmed One's dad gives off major creepy incest vibes. Like, it's really bad. It's really, really bad.
Yeah, you kind of... As soon as you said that to me, it was all I thought about the entire time I watched this episode today. The entire time.
And after you listen to us talk about it, you are never going to be able to watch this episode the same way ever again.
Yeah. I actually, until we had that conversation, really liked this episode. There were a lot of people credited as writer on IMDb when I looked it up, which is probably why this episode is such a wreck for continuity. But it was directed by Ellen S. Pressman, who I'd never heard of. But yeah, there were a lot of people trying to be captain on this ship for this one. There were like three different people credited as writers. There was an executive story editor that was credited, which he did not do a very good job either. Because it is really all over the place as far as like continuity, even just within the episode, as Siren said.
Yeah, super bad. And so getting back to the incest, you know, I gotta steer this ship back in that direction. So
love that for us.
This is the first episode in which the Charmed One's dad makes an appearance, and we don't see him again until season 3. So the actor who plays their dad in this episode, his name is Tony Dennison, and he's credited as Victor Halliwell, which is also not his name.
No, it is not.
In the series. Fun fact. So we have incest vibes just mixing it up with our continuity errors right there. Isn't that fun? But anyway, so the point is, after the episode aired, focus groups just really thought that the actor playing their dad had like a weird sexual chemistry with Shannon Doherty, who plays Prue. And that's like super cringy and awkward. So that was why he was recast after this episode. So really, and the show's creators didn't really think this episode was a success either for that reason.
Well, at least they knew. At least they could tell. You know, at least they knew.
It's hard to avoid.
I mean, I definitely didn't pick up on it, but that's not where my brain automatically goes. You know, I don't ever watch something where someone is playing a parental figure and think incest, but after you said
well,
that.
Well, my brain is always on incest, Tyler. So, no, that's not 100% true. No, my brain is always looking for ways to pick everything apart.
Well, I mean, it makes for a very interesting talking point, so I'm glad that there were incest vibes in this episode. Oh, okay. In the opening scene of this episode, the sisters are walking out of their house, talking about a party that they're going to, and Prue doesn't want to go. She's not having it. She has work to do. She's got to get up early. And then there's a creepy little doggy in the bushes. And then it's like watching them go across the street, and then its eyes glow, and it's like really creepy and like fucked.
There, I want to just highlight, there's a note that like Prue hits like in every episode for a while. Again, I guess because maybe they're assuming this might be the first episode you're seeing, but like for a while, just like they always find a way for Prue to like look at Phoebe and be like, "You don't have a job, you lazy unemployed bitch." And then this one, it's right at the beginning of the episode. Phoebe's like, "Let's have a party and charge for admission." And Prue's like, "Maybe you should just get a job." Pointed stare.
Yeah, one of the first things that Prue says in this episode is, "Some of us have a job." Some of us have a job. Like, trying to be all, like, better than thou to Phoebe, which is kind of... I mean, Prue sort of just thinks that she's better than everybody all the time, and that's because she kind of is, but, like...
That's a big part of it.
She doesn't live very long, though. So they go across the street to their neighbor's house, which, like, fun fact about the house across the street that they go into, the attic of that house is actually the model for the attic that we see in the Hallowell's house. I learned that from a random YouTube video that I saw where somebody was taking a tour of the property.
And yet, even though they use the attic of that house, the downstairs of the neighbor's house is also their house.
Their house.
It's pretty yes. obvious. I mean, obviously, you know, they had, like, money issues. You know, I'm sure they couldn't just, like, get, like, another huge-ass house to film, like, 5 minutes of a scene in. And they try to cover it up with, like, really close angles. And I appreciate that. You know, they remove the art from the wall. They fill the house with people. They keep the angles tight. But it's the same wall. It's the same trim. It's the same curtains. Their neighbor's house is their house. Which is just really strange because the plot focuses on their neighbors trying to get into their house, except they already are.
They're already in the house.
They're already there.
So their neighbors' names are Marshall, Cinda, and Fritz, who are siblings but also have quite heavy incest vibes.
Yeah, incest vibes pervade this episode, you guys.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but like when Cinda like crushes that beer can, I get like ultra mega lesbian vibes from her.
I get like hot dom top vibes when she crushes the beer can. Okay, Cinda is horrible, but also maybe one of my favorite villains.
She's horrible, but also kind of the best part of this episode.
Well, she's just really funny, and like nothing she does makes any sense. At all.
No, it really, really doesn't.
Not at all. But I do love when she crushes the beer can. Like, that was just hot.
It is pretty good.
Dom energy, and I'm here for it. I'm also really into lesbians, though, so I guess what you said tracks.
Yes, I love lesbians. They're great. They're truly the best of the gays.
They're the best of all of us. No, like, I'm into lesbians in, like, a hyper platonic way. Like, definitely not a sexual way. I would never want to like have sex with lesbians, but like
yes,
I guess maybe because like I'm not good enough for that.
We are not elevated.
I just want to be awed by their presence. They like I just think lesbians are the coolest.
Anyway, moving on from, I think we're focusing so hard on the gay vibe because we get this really awful, not subtle setup with Andy and Prue literally directly after.
Yeah, ew.
We get that incredible dom top energy. I'm pretty sure that my notes just say heterosexual flirting.
I think it's, this scene is super awkward to me. Okay, so what happens is they go to this house party that Prue doesn't want to go to in the first place, and her sisters are dragging along. And then she gets there and she finds out that Phoebe and Piper have arranged this ambush with Andy, who she doesn't want to see. And then they like force her to talk to him, and she's like super awkward about it. And then he asks her out on a date when she's like being clear that she's uncomfortable with the situation. And then she's like, I don't know, let me check my book. And then we're just kind of led to feel like Andy got friend-zoned, like he's the victim here. It's not a great scene.
It's not. This is backtracking just a little bit. We're already moving backwards in the first scene of the episode. Who makes up these party etiquette rules of like, you can't do a party in 20 minutes. You can't do this. It wouldn't look good if you left right after you got here. I'm sorry. If I go to a party and the vibe is off, I'm fucking leaving. Like,
yeah, I'm going to leave whenever I feel like it.
Yeah, I'm going to go in. I'm going to say hi. Yeah, I came to your party. My present is my presence, and now I'm leaving. You know?
Now, to be clear, though, whenever I am in the mood to leave a party is usually when I'm drunk off my ass and, like, stuck hanging over the back of an armchair and the homeowner wants me to leave. That's around the time that I get scared.
I get to that point if I ever even make it to a party, because sometimes I just don't go. So after that whole awkward fucking shebang with Prue and Andy, Prue goes back home. She ditches the party. She runs off. And she finds that the front door is open. She goes inside and there's a dog waiting on the stairs. And Prue's like, oh, fuck, there's a big ass dog in my house, and starts to like back up slowly. And the dog is, like, barking, freaking out, and looking all mean. And then Prue runs out the door, which, by the way, if you're backing away from an angry animal, you don't run away. You don't run. You back away slowly. But can we talk about just, like, breed stereotype issues with this scene?
I am so glad you brought that up, because that is the exact reason I put in the outline that the dog is a Rottweiler, because it is such a breed stereotype.
Yeah.
And, like, have you ever actually had a Rottweiler? I didn't, but my sister did, and he was the sweetest big puppy in the whole world.
I had a dog that was part Rottweiler, and actually I got him when I was fairly young, and my dad didn't want me to have him because he was part Rottweiler, and he was the sweetest dog in the whole world. Like, so nice, so gentle. The only thing he didn't really care for was cats. That was it. Like, other than that, he was super chill all the time. And it just, like, it makes me so mad, because it's, like, the same idea as, like, pit bulls being dangerous dogs when they're not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like all throughout, like, the 90s, whenever there was, like, a guard dog or a dog that was scary, it was, like, a Rottweiler or a Doberman,
yeah,
or, like, something like that. And it's just not fair.
No, it's really not.
Because I bet that dog was so nice. I bet that dog was so nice.
Probably. Or, like, think about what they did to the dog to make it act the way it does in the episode. That's, pretty ugly.
Yeah. Actually. Oh, yeah. I
wish I hadn't brought it up, but I did. So,
how somber. Let's move on.
Actually, we're going to move on by recapping. So, let's talk about this is where I begin with my continuity problems with this episode. Now, you could just say this is ridiculous and not a continuity error, but I'm going to say that it is. So, the dog is one of the shapeshifters. Now, I'm going to go ahead and spoil it for you. The neighbors, Marshall, Cinda, and Fritz, are the shapeshifters. So let's talk about how this scene plays out. They're going over to the shapeshifter's house for a party. We see the dog, who's one of the shapeshifters, watching them leave their house. Then they go to the party, and all three of the shapeshifters are there. And then Prue goes home and interrupts one of the shapeshifters in her house. So I think we're led to believe the dog is Cinda, because she's the one who walks away to go get beer.
Yeah.
So basically, Cinda is the dog at their house, watching them leave. Then she follows them into her own house to greet them. And then she goes back over to their house and transforms back into the dog. Like, what is going on?
I don't know why they needed to do that.
I mean, I guess they show kind of throughout the episode that these monsters are really bad planners.
They are. They really
are. It just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Obviously, they don't want us to think that the neighbors are the bad guys right away, even though, you know, it's pretty obvious.
It's very clear. It's very clear. The bad planning, though, should be an indication that Cinda is indeed not a lesbian, because they are very good at planning things.
That is so true. There's no way Cinda's a lesbian, now that you put it like that.
So I get it for introducing all three of the shapeshifters, but as far as planning goes, why couldn't they just be like, our sister's out on a beer run?
Yeah, right?
You know? And then she could come back and be like, oops, sorry, didn't get the book.
Sorry, I'm a fucking dog.
Sorry, I'm a fucking dog. I don't have opposable thumbs to open the door right now, but I didn't feel the need to change back into myself to open the door.
So anyway, I don't know if it's a continuity error or a bad writing, or the writers just literally weren't thinking about how that all looks once you know the episode's big reveal. But anyway, it just doesn't really work for me. It just doesn't make any sense. And it's breed stereotyping. Anyway, moving on.
We have the opening credits. And then after the credits, we are in the kitchen with the Hallowell sisters. And they're talking about what happened. And essentially, they're just recapping, like, there was a dog in the house. The dog had to have an owner. There were scratches on the door. And then there's a really cute moment where Phoebe locks Prue out of the house. And that's all that really happens there.
Well, the scene basically serves to reinforce the same motif of Prue's better than everyone and Phoebe sucks that we just get again and again throughout season one. Because, like, you know, a shapeshifter broke into the house. So what does Prue do? She blames Phoebe. She's like, Phoebe, you stupid bitch. Why can't you ever lock the doors? And Phoebe's like, well, I am going to prove you wrong by locking you out of the house right now.
You know, in that sense, I'm 100% on Phoebe's side.
I know. Because really, every time something happens, everyone blames Phoebe. And she's like, I didn't do that. And they're like, well, we're pretty sure that you did. Phoebe is being constantly gaslighted because of demons. That is so wrong. Okay, so, you know, Prue's locked out of the house, and then magically, with a, you know, screen fade, she gets to work. So she's at Buckland's, sitting in her office, which is so not her office later. So Prue's in her office, and a mysterious stranger shows up and asks Prue to appraise this ring. Okay? Prue thinks the ring is familiar. She says, she analyzes it, because as we discussed in a previous episode, Prue majored in stuff. Mm-hmm. So she basically knows everything about everything. Yes. She just has to look at it. Yeah, okay. So Prue's looking at the ring, and then she grabs a random book, and then she suddenly knows everything about the ring ever. And I do want to talk about the ring a little bit.
Okay.
Because we're talking about, like, gemstones and symbolism and stuff. Okay? So Prue says that the ring is chrysolite, and that this is an ancient Egyptian protection stone, specifically a stone that's supposed to protect against evil spells, curses, whatever. I, you know, really freeze-framed and looked at this ring, and I will tell you, that ring and the show, it's not chrysolite. It is not. The ring that she has is very dark green. If it's a real gemstone at all, it's most likely aventurine, which makes sense because it was a prop they used in one episode, and aventurine's fairly cheap. I think it's funny that they say chrysolite, just because chrysolite's, like, a completely different color. Like, it's green, but it's very light green. And fun fact, chrysolite is actually the same thing as olivine, which is also the same thing as peridot.
Oh.
So we have this same stone that has multiple names. And I ended up, because I'm crazy, doing a lot of research on chrysolite. So first of all, I could not find anything to back the fact that
it wards against spells.
Ancient Egyptians used it against spells. I can't find anything to back that up. Now, peridot is considered in, like, Wiccan mythology to be a basic protection stone. It's also apparently good at attracting love to you. This is really funny. Olivine, which is the exact same thing as peridot, is considered only good for attracting prosperity to you. I tried to find out what the difference was exactly. Apparently, olivine comes from Hawaii, and if it comes from anywhere else, it's peridot or chrysolite, even though it's the exact same mineral composition. So what I'm telling you right now is that gemstones are socially constructed. It's all a bunch of made-up shit. Or rather, the values and names that we place on them are socially constructed. I can tell you, however, that peridot was highly valued in ancient Egyptian society because they didn't really have access to that color of green. And I can also tell you that the ancient Egyptians did have a stone that they thought protected them from evil spells and curses, but that was actually carnelian,
ooh,
not chrysolite. And carnelian is orange, and just as cheap as aventurine, so they probably could have actually gotten that on a ring if they really tried.
I don't do a whole lot with crystals. I got kind of into them when I first started practicing. So I like quartz variations, essentially. They're easy to work with. I like their vibe, but I don't get into it too much. I don't subscribe to that too often.
So I freaking love crystals. Yeah, I have them all over my house. I always use them when I'm doing a spell by myself. I always find a way to use crystals because I have so many of them. But it's like beyond like the whole witchcraft thing. Like it's like a geological geek kind of a level with me. I'm obsessed with collecting them and I want to have like one specimen of every stone in existence. And I have to know all their names and stuff like that. So I just love gems. I just love it.
I mean, I fully support it. And I'm into them in a sense, but I don't use them as much as I should. Like, I have an amethyst pendant that I wear kind of a lot. So she says some other stuff. She says some other stuff about the ring. How they're placed is a symbol of duality, male and female. And then she asks if it's a wedding band. Wicca is very gendered, and it's very binarily gendered.
Yeah, ew.
Which is just not chill. But the
so not chill.
the man woman thing really got me when she was talking about.
I know. I didn't care for the way she said that either. Like, you could just say like a couple or like two people or something. It doesn't have to be man-woman. Like, I know this is 1998, Prue, but get with the fucking program, because these days, men and men can get married, too. Okay? Although, if we did, we probably wouldn't have some fake-ass aventurine ring and call it chrysolite. So, Prue asks if it's a wedding ring, and then he's like, I think you already know. And she's like, who the fuck are you? And he's like, again, I think you already know, Prudence. Like, he says her name, like, all, like, Prudence. And then she's like, wow, I fucking hate you. Get the hell out of my office. And she's freaking out. As the viewer, we don't exactly know why she's freaking out yet. But she wants this bitch gone, done out of her office. And then the guy, mysterious stranger, says this line that I just hate. And I wrote it down because I hate it so
much. I see it in the notes, and I'm not ready.
He says, fiery temper. I like that. Reminds me of someone I know.
Ew.
And then Prue's like, I'm nothing like you. And then he says, is that any way to talk to your father? And then as the audience, we're like, oh my God, it's her fucking dad.
What? I'm surprised he didn't say daddy.
Mm.
Is that any way to talk to your daddy?
I know. He does say daddy a lot in this episode, and it's very upsetting. And I definitely have a lot to say about that. Okay.
He really does.
But so we're about to move on to a new scene. So let me just talk about this scene. Okay. We're heading into creepy incest vibe territory. All right. So to start with, we have the fact that he offers her a wedding ring immediately. Okay. And then that line, fiery temper. I like that. That is like something you like say right before you bang some bitch you just met. Like that, it's just, it was so like sexual and ew.
It really was, and it was not good.
Like, did the actor know that he was her dad and not her ex?
Like, I feel like he had to, because the lines.
Well, he needs to be investigated immediately.
As an actor, sometimes we make choices that don't land, but I feel like... I feel like this is just not, I don't even know how you would, there's no excuse. I'm trying to like relate from an acting standpoint, but there's no excuse to be that sexual with a character that's supposed to be related to you.
It's not good. But I mean, like, he didn't write the line. Like, somebody wrote that line too.
Yeah, but he didn't have to say it like that.
How else do you say it? I like your fiery temper. Ew.
Like, here's the thing. A script, most of the time, is not set in stone. Like, an actor, most of the time, is allowed to, like, make improvisions when you are working with another person. He did not have to say that. He could have been like, fiery temper reminds me of someone I know. Without the I like that part.
Yeah, it's really the I like that.
Is the part that makes it icky. It's the icky. That's the part that makes it icky. Anyway.
Like, listen, I'm old-fashioned, okay? If you're my dad, I don't want you to fucking like anything about me. That's the way it's supposed to be.
Anyway, he leaves, and we go into a new scene, and the sisters are at some random cafe talking about Victor showing up. And Prue is, I think, very justified in her suspicion.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I feel like she does, I mean, as Prue does with most things, she takes it pretty far. But I think she's justified to be like, why is he showing up right now, like, 3 episodes after we found out we were witches?
Yeah, for real. Like, I would be suspicious.
Yeah. Ew. Yeah, like...
And then he, like, ambushes her at work?
Yeah, he just, like, shows up.
At work? Like, I don't fucking dump anything on me at work, okay? I mean, like, and Prue has, like, an office, and she can close the door, and that's still fucking stressful. Like, if you came at me with some family drama at work, I would be like, listen, I have 16 customers mad at me right now. I can't fucking help you. Just do not come to me with your drama at work, Dad.
That has happened to me on more than one occasion. I have had to leave work several times for family drama. But sometimes I'm like, girl, I have 6 hours left. I can't help you right now. Prue is suspicious. I get it. Piper is understanding, but she's also like, I want to meet him. I want to see him. We didn't get a chance to know him. And I feel like everybody at the table right now is justified in how they're feeling. Every single person.
I feel like they all react in the same way that they react to everything. Which, I mean, I don't know if it's lazy writing or character continuity or a little bit of both. I don't know. But Prue is, like, angry and in denial. Piper is confused and conflicted. And Phoebe is eager and excited. And that's how they are with everything in season one.
You're right. You got a point. But Phoebe decides that she's going to go do whatever she wants anyway, as Phoebe normally does.
Yeah.
And she goes to see Victor at the hotel, and it's very uncomfortable.
And we have the most creepy, incestuous scene ever. Oh, my God.
Yes.
This scene is horrible.
It's so bad. He's fucking naked, getting a rub down. So,
yeah.
Like, oh, my God. Phoebe walks in, like, I mean, the reason he forgets her name is because she walked in, like, 2 seconds after he's about to get a happy ending. Like, that's... And she walks in and she's like, Daddy.
Daddy?
Daddy?
He's fucking naked, fresh off the massage table. And she calls him Daddy.
She's
Daddy.
She's fucking 21 years old. There's no reason.
I think, well, okay, so we do need to be fair here. Tyler, you and I are both gay. And the word daddy has a kind of a different connotation for us. Like, gay people see daddy one of two ways, and that's, like, the hairy-chested guy who's about to whip the shit out of you, or the guy who, like, totally let you down your whole life.
Or, in this particular situation, both at the same time.
Yeah. No, so I think the reason that Phoebe says daddy is because she doesn't even remember him because she was so young when he left. And so she still has kind of this, like, little girl mentality about what it would be like to have a father, which actually is how she acts through this whole episode. And it is pretty well justified and explained, I would say.
Yeah, I think so,
but
too.
But to us, looking back on it now, it's creepy as fuck. It's creepy as fuck, because apparently not one of those failed writers or directors or storyboard editors, even though they had like 15 of them, apparently none of them was gay.
Apparently
or
not.
Somebody would have caught this shit.
I mean,
somebody
honestly,
caught this shit.
I feel like there would have just been, if anybody on the Charmed writers team was gay, I feel like there would have been a little bit more representation than there
is. Ooh, fun fact, since we're getting into it, I will have to research this and bring it up later. We can talk about it more fully. But apparently, Aaron Spelling, who was like the executive producer or something.
For a really long time,
was very homophobic. and would not allow, like, any, like, overtly gay representation in the show at all. Because that was actually a big criticism that Charmed got. It was like, you're filming in San Francisco and you have zero gay characters ever. And apparently that was because Aaron Spelling did not want them in his show.
Ew. I did not know that. Yeah. And now I have a whole new set of issues. I have a whole new set of issues I'm going to have to work through in therapy next week. So thank you very much for that information, Siren.
Well, that's what I'm here for.
So she hugs Daddy.
Ew!
And she gets a premonition. She gets a premonition of him holding the Book of Shadows. And Phoebe is like, oh, fuck. I just hugged a strange man. And I got a really bad vibe, so let me just bail now.
Okay. All right. So let's recap. Creepy incest vibes. Phoebe walks in. Her dad is naked. She calls him Daddy. He calls her the wrong name. Like, she's the slut he just hooked up with that he picked up at the bar down the street. And then he wants to hug her. And then she gets creeped out and bails.
I mean, I've definitely been in a situation where a guy I was calling Daddy hugged me and then I wanted to leave.
Ew. I'm so sorry.
Didn't get a chance to, though.
I have literally never been called or called anyone Daddy, and I never, ever will. Mostly because of this
episode. I've done it more times than I care to admit, but let's move on to the next scene with the mailman.
Oh my god. No, I want to talk about this.
No, thank you.
Okay, fine. Moving on.
We'll get into my promiscuous past later.
Yeah, okay, fine. I know all the listeners really want to hear that.
I'm sure.
I mean, I do. So.
Okay, so
we're going into a new scene, and there is a mailman approaching their door, and he turns his
finger... I have a big issue with this.
He turns his finger into a key. I wonder if we have the same issue.
I have a feeling that we do have the same issue.
I bet we do. Okay, so... He's a shapeshifter. He turns his finger into a key. As far as shapeshifter abilities go, that's pretty fucking cool. Like, you could basically get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, with that key finger thing. Like, I think that's great. All right. And I don't think they ever did it again on this show. I've never seen it on any other show. Key fingers. Now, the effect looks like dumb as hell. But yeah. The concept, okay, is pretty neat.
Somebody used Adobe After Effects and was like, how can I make something look like a balloon animal? And then turn it into a key. Because the more that I watch this show, the more I am entirely sure that they bought, like, the trial version of Adobe After Effects because it was really cheap. And that's what they used for the entirety of the show. I'm convinced that that's what it was. Because I don't know if you've ever worked with Adobe After Effects, but I have because I had this fantasy when I was younger of creating, like, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan film. So I bought a, like, visual effects, and it was Adobe After Effects, and it looks just like everything that happens in Charmed.
Okay, so two things about that. I guess just one thing about that, and that is, when you revisit this childhood dream, can I play Buffy? I'll get a wig.
You'll get a wig? The fan film actually was...
I'm going to be your Buffy.
It didn't include Buffy. It was just in the same universe. Anyway, wrong show. My question about the scene, the issue that I have with this scene, is if he can turn his finger into a key, why did he need to kick down the attic door?
Seriously.
Why?
So he breaks into their house with his Adobe After Effects key fingers. And then he goes up to the attic and he's like, oh my god, this stupid fucking attic door won't open. What should I do? I mean, I have no tools with which to deal with this. I better kick down the door. But like we have said, these shapeshifters are not great at planning.
They're not the best planners. Because Brew comes home and catches the shapeshifter in the house, and he turns into Andy. How come she doesn't call him? And it's like, I'm so sorry. How come? Okay. How come when she gets back and the shapeshifter turns into Andy, she doesn't call Andy and is like, why did you fucking kick down my door? I don't understand. Just the whole the whole thing that happens, it just doesn't make sense. I'm so sorry. Oh, I'm crying.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to try to keep going while Tyler gets his shit together. Okay, so after the shapeshifter kicks down the door for absolutely no fucking reason, he grabs the Book of Shadows. He picks it up. He touches it. He picks it up, and he holds it, and he moves it. Okay? Now we're in continuity error territory.
Yes, I thought the same thing.
Later in the show, it becomes impossible for anything evil to touch the book. They get, like, electrocuted and thrown across the room, which, by the way, is the coolest fucking thing, and I want my book to do that just when anybody touches it, period.
Same. Even me.
Yeah, especially you. So, it's really weird to watch. Now, obviously, like, this episode came before the book, like, got all electrocuty or whatever, but, like, knowing the mythology of the show in the future, it's still really weird to watch this scene, because, like, mm-hmm. when he just grabs the book... And there's even, like, this, like, musical, like, twist. There's, I don't know, there's this, like, sound effect, this, like, dramatic music swell that happens when he grabs the book that makes it feel even more wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's just wrong. It's just, I was just like, you can't do that. You know, I'm just looking at him. Like, this is against the rules. So he takes the book downstairs, and the book won't leave the house. Like, he tries to carry the book out the house, and the book just, like, you know, falls out his arms and onto the floor, and it just won't leave the house. And he tries to, like, throw the book out the house. It's just ridiculous, really. But anyway, so the book doesn't electrocute you right now, but it can't leave the house, I guess.
And I actually thought that effect looked kind of good, the book glowing. I expected to, like, not like it at all, but the more I watched it, the more I was like, that's decent. That looks okay.
No, it does. It absolutely does. And for being, like, this literal, like, no-name actor who is playing a shape-shifted mailman who's not even the actual shapeshifter character, I think he did really well interacting with the special effect.
I think so, too. I think that this scene, aside from the fucking weird thing with the door, I'm not going to lose my shit again. Aside from why he kicks down the door, I think this scene is really well done altogether. Like, the one thing that is out of place for me is why does he fucking kick down the door and make a huge mess? But the rest
know.
Of it
I
looks
guess
good.
It used to be like, because he's like scary. But again, it's like they're like sneaking around, you know, like they're trying not to alert the charmed ones to what they're doing. But then they're like, oh, I better break their fucking house.
But I think he really thought he got it that time. I think he really thought he got it that time, and he was just gonna like take off, and then they were gonna die, and then it didn't work.
Okay. Counted his chickens before they hatched. I see. Anyway, so this part also, this actually really bothers me about this scene. The shapeshifter mailman is holding the book in the doorway, and Prue is walking up the steps. But she, like, doesn't see him standing there. He sees her, and he's like, oh, fuck. And she's like, oh, I guess I'd better be looking down at my keys in my hand and not notice that my front door is fucking open with a stranger standing in it. And then, so then the shapeshifter goes back inside and closes the door. Prue is right next to the door and doesn't notice it closed right in front of her. Whatever.
That doesn't make any sense. And then he turns into Andy, pretends to be startled when Prue walks in, I guess, which is a thing. They have this conversation, and I don't know why he chose to turn into Andy, because that just... It would be really easy to get caught turning into somebody that they've been that intimate with.
Right? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, I get why they did it. They did it so that Prue could tell the shapeshifters that her dad was in town, and that's, like, important to the plot or whatever. But it doesn't make any sense, and it's going to make even less sense here in a moment, and I will get upset. But what I really want to talk about is my favorite part of this scene, which is where Cinda knocks on the door and just walks into her house, just walks into Prue's house, and she says, everything okay? And Prue says, yeah, great party yesterday. And then Cinda says, bye, and then just leaves. What the fuck? What the fuck? Can you imagine? Hi, I'm at your house. Okay, I'm leaving now. I would file a restraining order. I would be like, absolutely not. Why is she here?
Immediately. You saying that puts it in a different perspective for me. I tried to dismiss it as like, oh, she's a concerned neighbor. You know, she heard a commotion and came over. But there was no reason for her to be there at all. 0%. So no. That was suspicious.
None whatsoever.
I feel like that should have been the moment where Prue was like, hey, wait a fucking minute, guys. Wait a minute.
Right?
You know, but no, she didn't. She was distracted by somebody looking like Andy because she really wants to fuck Andy again.
Except she doesn't, but she does, but she doesn't, but she does, but she doesn't.
She wants any distraction from her dad being in town, so she's going to climb Andy like a tree.
Well, that makes sense. She actually says as much to him at one point. Yeah. She does. She, like, I don't remember exactly when it was, but she flat out said it. She was like, oh, I wish I could go out with you tonight to avoid going to dinner with my dad.
Yeah.
I would be like, okay, that's really flattering. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
I love being your excuse, boyfriend. Everybody leaves. Prue goes upstairs and sees that her attic door is fucking broken, and she does not immediately call Andy and ask why the fuck he did that.
Yeah. Because he was the only one in there, so it had to have been him.
All right, so we've got a new scene now, and basically the sisters have gotten together to talk about the exact same shit they've already talked about. They're talking about their dad. Prue is like, I know that our fucking dad, who is a big incestuous creep, broke into our house and broke the attic door. For some reason. And Phoebe acts all stupid. She's like, well, Prue, I just want you to know that I did not have a vision about Dad stealing the Book of Mormon. And then Piper says this line that is just fantastic. Why would Dad even want the Book of Shadows? The craft is a chick thing. It's passed down through the female line. Piper, you dumb bitch.
No, it's not.
And not only is that dumb as fuck, but it is also, get this, a continuity error, because later in this very season there are male witches.
There are,
okay, or at least one. There is one.
There is a male witch
in this very season.
In this very season, yeah.
So, like, why even? This is not only socially incorrect, but it's a continuity error. So I guess that was a pretty dumb thing to say, huh, Piper?
Yeah, I feel like somebody wrote that line because there were fucking 1,000 writers on it. But I feel like maybe this line slipped through the cracks a little bit. And then they were like, oh, fuck, how'd that get in there? We just wrote this episode slotted for a couple weeks from now where there's a little boy witch. I do have issues with that. And I mean, we discussed it a little bit in our first episode with the whole witch warlock dichotomy thing. It's just inaccurate. And honestly, every time I hear that line, it offends me a little bit.
It's just stupid. And the point is, listeners, men can be witches too, all right? No matter what Piper Halliwell said that one fucking time when she was making an ass out of herself. At this point, because Phoebe just really wants her daddy to be the good guy, she tries blaming Andy for the break-in. Like, hey, you know, Prue, he was, like, standing right here. And then Prue was like, well, he also broke the attic door down, but I don't think that it was him. It didn't happen exactly like that, but
it did not happen exactly like that. But
Piper and Phoebe are like, we're going to dinner with Dad no matter what you want. And then Prue says, fine, I'm going to stay at home and eat leftover broccoli.
I've never seen anybody reheat broccoli like that ever.
I know, just
life.
Like plain. It's very uncomfortable. I think it was just it was very austere. I think it was done in like comparison. Like, Prue could be at this fancy restaurant with her dad, but instead, because she's sulky and stubborn, she's staying at home eating reheated broccoli out of a Tupperware.
Andy stops by, and they don't talk about how he was there before. She doesn't ask him about why he fucking... She doesn't ask him why he fucking broke down her attic door this time. There's no mention of how he was in her house before at all.
None. So they're talking about her dad. She's telling him how her dad just showed up, which she already told the shapeshifter version of Andy. And neither of them put it together that that didn't happen. Like, it's a mess. It's an absolute mess.
Maybe Andy was just trying to cover for the fact that he doesn't really listen to Prue when she talks. And... because he just wants what he wants out of the relationship, you know?
You know, I would have loved if they'd actually taken that direction with it. That would be really funny. Piper and Phoebe are at dinner with their dad, which, by the way, adding to the creepy incest vibes, I really feel like, I mean, yeah, I guess he wanted to take them to a nice dinner, but it just is like dark and candlelit and kind of romantic looking restaurant, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's creepy. It's creepy. Like, he's taking his daughters on a date, a double date with my kids, who I abandoned. I like when one of them calls me daddy, you know? Like, it's just, it's kind of weird.
Now he's trying to make, like, these personal connections, and he looks at Piper, and he's like, the last time I saw you, you would only eat white food.
Like, why it gotta be white?
What does that even mean? I feel he's really just grasping at straws with them because he wants something from them. I'm not gonna make the joke that I was gonna make because it was gross.
Ew, now I want to hear it. No, I don't. You're right. It's gross.
It's gross. Nasty. I'm not gonna do it.
Okay, so that's all going on. And then Prue, like, meets Andy and doesn't know that, like, you know, he was a shapeshifter before and he broke the attic door. Whatever. And then Andy's like, what if you go talk to your dad? And Prue is like, okay, fine. We see Prue walking into the restaurant. She goes up to their table and immediately picks a fight. It's very dramatic and I approve. I love it.
Of course you do. I thought it was a little much, but then again, I usually think things that Prue does are a little much.
I thought it was hilarious. So let me tell you about this whole episode, really, but especially this scene. So, like, mouthing off to your dad, who you fucking hate because he let you down in public, that sounds like fun to me. All right. So I like this scene. I do. It fucking sounds like fun. So I'm like, yeah, Prue, you fucking let him have it. Okay?
I hate how he calls her Prudence. And I know that's her name. I know her name is Prudence, but the way that he says it is creepy.
It's very kind of like, I guess, overriding her identity with, like, his memory of her.
Yeah.
That's what I think. She goes by Prue on purpose, but he remembers what he used to call her as a kid. And so, because he knows nothing about her now, he's calling her that. Because in his head, she's this little girl he remembers from back before he ditched her. So I think that's why he calls her Prudence.
That is a really good observation. I've talked about that concept before, how when you see somebody that you knew from a long time ago, you kind of regress because they don't know who you are as a person now and this evolution of your life. You sort of become an old version of yourself when you see, like, an old friend or a family member you've been distanced from. There's this element of regression that comes along with it on both parts. I get what you're saying there. It didn't register for me at first, but I should have picked up on that because I think about it all the time.
They're at the restaurant. Prue's being a bitch to her dad. It's really satisfying. And because her dad is an absolute douchebag, this waiter comes up with their dessert, which is flambé, and it's literally on fucking fire. And Victor, the dad,
trips the waiter.
Okay. That is, like, so dangerous. Like, he could have literally burnt that guy's fucking face off. So right there, I feel like they should just be done with Dad. Like, he's a dick.
What if they hadn't had their powers? What if he was wrong and they weren't witches?
What if he was 100% wrong and he just, like, massively permanently disfigured this poor waiter for no reason? Or, like, set the building on fire?
But luckily, he was correct and Piper freezes things just in the nick of time. Again.
And Piper rescues the flambé, which is important. You know, the dessert is, dessert is crucial.
Another example of Piper having the best fucking power. The best power.
And I would say that using her power to rescue the dessert is definitely personal gain. I'm not judging, but I feel like someone is.
Magic is judging. The omniscient presence of magic is judging. So we find out that he knows that they're witches, right?
Yeah, so he's like, oh, Piper, you freeze time. Phoebe, that is your name, right? What do you have?
Yeah, so he does that whole fucking thing. He knows what their powers are. He knows who has what. And then we go to this next scene that's very confusing to me. When I first watched it, I did not understand. Mm-hmm. I remembered that Prue said she wanted to go out with Andy. And so the shapeshifters thought that just Prue was going to be gone. And then they all three come home and they're like, oh, fuck. But why is one of them a mailman still? Why is he a mailman still?
Everything that you just said was very hard to follow for everyone except for me. So I will translate.
Please do.
So we're in a new scene, and we see Piper and Phoebe just kind of chilling at their house. And you're like, well, that can't be, because they're totally at dinner with their dad. What's going on? And then the mailman with the key fingers who kicked down the door shows up. Piper and Phoebe are like, dude, you can't be here. And then the mailman's like, you guys are stupid. And the point of all of this is that suddenly these people who we're looking at shapeshift into, oh my God, the neighbors. It's the fucking neighbors. I know that I already told you that, but like, you guys, it's the fucking neighbors.
It's the neighbors.
The neighbors are shapeshifters. Oh my God. So this is the big reveal. And it was probably, they were probably still disguised as the mailman so that it could be a big reveal, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And that was just all they had. I mean, I guess, like, it could have been a scene of, like, Piper and Phoebe arguing with, like, a dog or something. Yeah. So anyway, so now we know that the neighbors are shapeshifters. They get into a fight about how stupid they all are. Tyler, tell us about what Cinda does here, because I know you really love it.
Cinda turns into the Goblin King. They're like, oh no, what are we gonna do? And then, very in the manner of David Bowie, Cinda shapeshifts and is like, kill them! And it's just this whole... it's this whole big thing, but she looks exactly how David Bowie looked in Labyrinth.
Okay, she literally has a mullet. For no reason.
She has a mullet for no reason. She has, like, pointy fucking ears. Her teeth are, like, fucking... Oh my God. I just love it so much because it's stupid. It's so dumb.
It's really stupid. It really is. It's like it's her like true form or something.
I think
like
so.
Her true demon form is this like pasty mulleted freak. But she's the only one who has a true demon form.
She's the only one that changes.
Her brothers don't.
And then for the rest of the fucking episode after she does that, she like acts like she's Quasimodo and is hunched over and like fucking wobbling back and forth. Like, for the rest of the episode.
I feel like Cinda is, like, super awkward for the entire episode. Like, I feel like she's super awkward before that.
Like, this is jumping ahead a little bit, but when they, like, are fucking at Victor's hotel room and she's just, like, swaying and she's like, why don't I kill you and pretend, why don't
I love how she, like, breathes heavy through the whole thing. No, Cinda's just really extra. And she's, like, a terrible villain, but I find her relatable.
I really like her.
Sometimes don't you just want to, like, transform into a demon and, like, threaten to kill people? Like, I just get that way sometimes.
I just love her. I think that she is so funny. This is my favorite thing in the whole episode is just Cinda. Just Cinda.
Cinda is the only redeeming part of this episode, okay?
Oh.
She's the best part, and it just is what it is.
Anyway... Fucking Goblin King aside, they decide that they need to get the fuck out of the house, right? So they turn into these fucking birds and fly out the door.
So the real sisters come home and they open the door and the shapeshifters have turned into crows and they fly out the door.
They're very in the style of The Crows Have Eyes from starring Moira Rose.
Yes. But what I want to know is if they could just turn into birds and fly away. Why did they let themselves get caught doing anything else other than that?
That's a good question. I don't know why they didn't just turn into a bird every single time. Because then the sisters would have just been like, how do these fucking birds keep getting in our house? It would have been so much less dramatic. And they probably would have gotten away with it. Just poor planning. Poor planning. So very clearly,
basically,
all of these shapeshifter siblings are heterosexual because they cannot plan anything.
They cannot plan for shit.
They cannot plan anything.
So, okay, so I want to do this next part a little out of order, if we can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, like, you know, the shapeshifter scene happens, like, in between their, like, fight with Victor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is just kind of unnecessary. So, when we next see the shapeshifters, they're back in their own house, which is also the Charmed One's house, across the street in the same house, basically. And I love this part because Cinda is just, like, breaking furniture.
She's
just, like, pissed off. And she, like, breaks the fuck out of this, like, chair or end table.
She's like, God damn it, I'm so horny. And it's just breaking everything.
Which also proves that she's not a lesbian, because if she were, she would not be breaking that chair. She'd be putting it together. All right, so Cinda's breaking furniture and just, like, giving one-word answers to everything because she's suddenly a troglodyte. The shapeshifters are talking about how they're afraid to fight the charmed ones, which, as stupid as they are, I feel like that also kind of makes them, like, smarter than every other demon in the show.
Yeah, they try to be strategic, but they just fail.
Yeah, all these other demons are, like, super cocky, and they're like, yeah, we can totally fight the charmed ones, no big deal. But these shapeshifters are like, ooh, I don't know. They'll probably kick the fuck out of us.
Demons in the show are either like, yeah, we can take the charmed ones. Or they're like, going up against the charmed ones is suicide. Which is the more correct answer. But it's always one of those two.
But then
two.
They do it anyway.
Or they're like, we must attack them as women. Because did you know? They're women. But yes, you are correct. The shapeshifters are smarter than other demons because they try to at least be like savvy about what they're doing,
but they're still stupid.
But
the point is, they're like, I don't think we can beat them in battle. Let's use Victor. And they say it in such a way to, like, maybe imply that, like, Victor's already on their side. Like, it's very, like, mysterious.
We still have Victor. That line was definitely ADR dialogue replacement that they did after. I feel like maybe,
oh, you know, I didn't think about that, because it does sound weird, but you're probably right.
That happens a lot. There's a lot of stuff, especially in this first season, where you can tell that they had to re-record it and put it in after. I feel like that's why it sounded so funny, but it did, it was a little suspish, so.
We're back at the charmed house, which is the shapeshifter's house. It's the same house. I'm not getting over it. So Phoebe, Piper, and Prue have just discovered that their dad knows that they're witches. They do some, like, reminiscing about photographs for a little bit. Basically, Victor trying to ingratiate himself into their lives. Look how great of a dad I was 20 fucking years ago.
As you said, and I agreed, again, sort of erasing their identities, overriding how they've grown and their progress and who they are as people now, I feel is very much what he's still trying to do.
Yeah. So he still sucks, basically, is what we're saying.
Yeah, he's still crappy. He's still a bad dad. Prue kind of isn't really talking very much. Piper doesn't want to talk about being witches at all. She's trying to change the subject, and then that's all Phoebe wants to say. All she wants to talk about is witchcraft with their dad. And then Prue is, like, stoic, and then Piper's like, this is going to get messy.
I'll get coffee.
Let me go get coffee. Let me be the mediator middle sister.
Okay, so then their dad is like, oh, hey, speaking of the Book of Shadows, which I brought up, do you think I could go and, like, see it? And Prue is like, do you think I could, like, fucking kill you?
Yeah, she really does kind of give it to him.
That's okay. That's paraphrasing. but basically, their dad brings up the Book of Shadows, which, you know, they know someone's been trying to get to the past couple days. And Prue, she's like done at this point. She's like, okay, I'm done with your bullshit. And then she tells him to tell her sisters the truth and admit that he's there to steal their book. And then he's like, okay, yeah, that's why I'm here. Because not only is he a deadbeat dad, but he's like a stupid muggle.
Yeah. And he's like, very much a muggle.
Yeah, he's just like, magic sucks. It'll kill ya.
I have just issues with this. I talked about in the last episode an experience that I've had with a family member finding out that I practice witchcraft. And it applies here as well.
It really does.
Unless you were raised in witchcraft by your family, which some people have been. Most people that come to the craft have had an experience very similar to this, where someone just does not understand the craft, doesn't understand what it does, and tries to give you their opinion on it and tries to make you think the way that they think and feel the way that they feel. I've encountered this not just with family members, but with a bunch of different people throughout my life. I've had people tell me that I worship the devil. I've had people tell me that I'm gonna burn in hell like my sister.
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely had all of that.
I don't know. I feel like it is very pointed, and I like that Charm did this. I liked that they created this dichotomy with their father where he is not approving of magic and witchcraft and things of that nature, because I think it's realistic.
It is realistic. You're absolutely right.
When someone finds out that you practice magic, they get concerned about you.
And I've experienced that from both of my parents.
It's something that we've all experienced, and I know I've experienced it not just from my parents, but from just random people that would find out that I'm a witch. I've had people tell me that they were, like, afraid for me and shit like that.
I actually had kind of this exact same experience recently. I didn't think about it until you put it into perspective. So my dad and I did not talk for 10 years. And I guess it was like 2 years ago, I decided to let him back into my life and give him another shot, which is going very well now. Very well now. But the first time I had him over to my house, which I was proud of because we had just bought it, I refused to put my altar away. I was not going to hide it. So he wanted to come see my house, so I let him, but I didn't hide shit. And he saw my altar, and he, like, jumped to incredibly wrong conclusions about what it was there for. He asked me if I was having seances all the time. He asked me if I had any special powers, like moving things with my mind, to which I was kind of sassy about that one. I was like, I mean, I really wish, but no matter what I do, it doesn't work. But he asked me a lot of weird questions like that. And then he told me that he used to be involved in, like, demon worship and witchcraft, and that he didn't want me going down the same road. And I was like, yeah, I don't think we're talking about the same thing. But it was really awkward, like super awkward. Because, I mean, like, we were, like, just talking again, you know? And then that happened. And actually, we're cool about it now. My stepmom, of all people, like, he talked to her about it. He talked to her about what I was doing. And she was like, oh, honey, you're being stupid. But he told me later that my stepmom filled him in on, like, what Wicca and paganism and witchcraft really were. And she said that it was a great thing and that I was fine. I wasn't doing anything bad. And he told me about this. And he was like, so I've decided to be okay with it. And I'm sorry that I acted stupid. We've all experienced having someone not understand what witchcraft is. I think very few of us have experienced someone apologizing for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's what happened. True story.
When my dad and I had that conversation, when we talked about the fact that I wanted to study witchcraft, because we did talk about it before he passed away. I started studying about a year before he got ill. And I was like, you know, I'm thinking about doing this. I am really interested in it. I feel like it might be a good fit for me. And then he actually, like, took the time to research what it was. But we had a good talk about it. And then with my mom, anytime it ever came up or I talked about something, she was like, how do you know all this stuff? And I was like, I read a fucking book, Mom.
When their dad comes in and says he doesn't want them to be witches, that's pretty realistic. And I think a lot of us identify with that. What follows this statement is a pretty satisfying argument where dad blames their grandma for sending him away and suggests that she used magic to keep him away from them. And then all three of them kind of, like, turn on him and are like, fuck you, dad, that's bullshit. Don't talk about our fucking grandma that way. And I just really enjoy the part where they all turn on him.
Yeah, it's very nice. It is very satisfying.
It is. It is. And then Prue is just like, you know what? I'm done with this. She says, no one can hurt us as bad as you. And she uses her power to throw him into a wall. How bad do some of you out there want to use telekinesis to throw your dad into a wall? Oh,
maybe not my dad, but yes, I have thought about that before. I am really proud of Piper in that scene where they're all talking to, where they're all coming for Victor, because Piper really has some backbone there. She really, like, goes in, and that's not something that we normally see from her. So I was very into that. I was very into that for Piper.
She has, I mean, she definitely develops a hard backbone later, but I think in the beginning I like her character so much because she is at this default state of anxiety and meekness, but, like, her backbone, like, shines through at certain moments. And I think that's actually probably more relatable than the other two.
Yeah,
in that way, that she's kind of a real complex person.
Anyway, Prue throws him across the room.
And then suddenly no one is on Prue's side anymore. Like, okay, I thought we all hated Dad, so I can't use my powers on him. Now that's too far for you guys. Okay, I'm sorry.
I mentioned earlier, Prue has a tendency to take things a little too far sometimes.
A little too far. Yeah. You know, it really was, like, extremely too far, quite honestly.
Yeah, that was a lot.
But again, satisfying. Like, really. And so, like, not the way they're supposed to use their powers. Oh, my God.
No, 100%. I don't know how she didn't get in some cosmic trouble for that, but...
Yeah. Well, it's because the rules are very arbitrary. But so then, so when Victor gets off the floor, he says, if you wanted me to leave, all you had to do was ask. And, like, that line pissed me off. That is just a whole bunch of gaslighting right there. Because Prue literally has been telling you to leave since the episode began. And then he has the audacity to say that.
He does finally leave. He finally listens after they fuck it. I mean, straight white men only answer to violence anyway.
That's true.
That's the only thing that gets the message across.
So maybe from her point of view, like, she's been trying to get rid of him for, like, 2 days now. So to her, it probably didn't feel like overreacting.
When he does finally leave, he goes back to his hotel and is ambushed by the shapeshifters. And it's awkward. This whole scene is weird. It doesn't make sense. He's not afraid, which I can kind of get, I guess. He doesn't want to show fear.
I don't know. It's really hard to discern his motivation here. But yeah.
It's not clear if he's actually trying to work with them to get rid of the book or if he's trying to stay alive. And the way that it comes off is confusing. In my opinion, it's not an effective misdirect. You know, if you're wanting to misdirect someone from what's actually going on, you want your audience to automatically think one thing. You don't want it to be muddled and vague.
Mm-hmm.
You want it to be clear. So that way you can have kind of a big reveal later when they realize it's not what they thought. And that doesn't happen here.
I think that the rest of the episode is pretty sloppy and rushed in general. I think that they just spent so much time developing the family drama, and the actual climax of the episode was Dad being thrown into the wall. Because everything that happens after is very rushed. We have Victor in his hotel being ambushed by the shapeshifters, right? He's bantering with them. He's not scared of them. Cinda's breathing really heavy for some reason. He's either working with the shifters or trying to stay alive, and it's just really unclear.
It's very unclear. So the next morning, the sisters are having breakfast, and it's a very tense breakfast. And Phoebe finally comes clean about her premonition.
Which is just, I don't know, the way Prue reacts in this scene is so out of character.
Like it's because she was right. I feel like the only reason that she showed any sort of, like, compassion is because she was right.
Well, maybe it's out of character for me, then. Because if I were in that situation and I was like, oh, okay, so you literally had a psychic vision proving that I was right and you still told me to my face that I was wrong, I would not react well to that.
I understand.
But anyway.
I can agree that it doesn't make sense that she wasn't a little bit upset with her. But I like the moment that they have where they sort of...
Oh, it's a nice moment.
It is a nice moment.
They all make up anyway.
And then Piper finds...
The not chrysolite ring.
The not chrysolite ring. It's an ugly fucking ring. I don't know why I didn't say that at the beginning, but it's not cute.
Yeah, just to clarify, this is not an attractive accessory.
Anyway, they put it on the table and they say that they're going to send it back to the hotel. And they don't have to because Victor's fucking outside. Phoebe goes to get the mail and he's just like... Sup, bitch? And just, like, grabs her.
You know how you just kicked me out? Well, I'm back.
It's a stalking situation.
It kind of is.
And he plants a premonition on her. And it's like, oh my god, shapeshifters!
And then Phoebe realizes, oh my god, my vision was not of Dad. It was of a shapeshifter. Now, I want to point out that this is kind of weird, because, like, in a normal episode of Charmed, they're kind of, like, the demon's on their radar for a while. But, like, in this one, they literally don't know that they're fighting these shapeshifters until about 5 minutes before they kill them.
Yeah.
You know?
You're right.
Because this episode is really about the family stuff. not, the demons are kind of incidental, which is why it's just really darn fortunate that Cinda is such a joy to watch.
Yeah, they're very inconsequential in the grand scheme of the episode. I mean, obviously they know that someone is after the book, but they don't, the shapeshifters aren't even a thought. And then luckily, Phoebe realizes that they endanger Girl, and she goes inside to try to find a spell and realizes that Cinda is there.
And this, well, see, to me, this is where it just gets really messy. Like, Phoebe runs in, she tries to tell her sisters that the neighbors are shapeshifters, and then suddenly just, like, everyone is in their house. Like, Cinda just barges in with cookies, and then suddenly, like, Fritz and Marshall are there, too. And then suddenly Victor walks in and says, Daddy's home!
Daddy's home!
Or is that the fake dad? I don't know.
The first one that comes in is a shapeshifter.
Right. Okay. Well, the shapeshifter Victor walks in and says, Daddy's home. And that is just a fucked up line. No way around it.
But I mean, it's accurate in the story because they've called him Daddy a fucking bunch.
I know, but it sucks.
Let's talk about the spell. Let's talk about the spell. Let's get into this spell.
Yeah. So Phoebe goes to the attic and the book turns its own pages to reveal a spell to remove all beings from their house. According to the Charmed fandom website, this is called the safety spell, even though it does not say that in the book.
Misspelled. Now it's time for Misspelled. This is the segment where we examine the validity of the Charmed One spells and talk about how a real witch might go about accomplishing the same thing. Siren, how do you think this spell stands up?
I actually like this spell. I like the wording of it. I do want to say, in the episode, this spell just, like, kills everything in their house that's not them, and I don't understand why they don't use it all the time. I could see using a reworked version of these words if I wanted someone to leave my house. I'll tell you what. If you were to say, when in the circle that is home, safety's gone and evils roam, rid all beings from these walls, save us sisters three, now heed our call. If you were to say that while standing right in front of someone that you wanted to leave your house, they would probably get the message.
Yeah, they probably would.
But yeah, I could see, I mean, I think it has a nice little rhyme. I could see it being reworded to maybe get rid of unwanted visitors or, I don't know. You could even reword it to get rid of, like, pests or vermin or termites or something. All sorts of things.
Oh, yeah.
So I like the spell. I like the spell. I do. I think it's pretty decently written.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too.
What about you? What do you think about it?
I also think that the spell, as far as the rhyming, is pretty good. You could use it maybe not even specifically for people, but as you said, like, rats and stuff. But I was thinking more, like, spirits. Right? This would be a good spell.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah.
To, like, do an exorcism with. But yeah, I think it's good. I would use it for an exorcism, 100%. That's what I would use it for. What are some ways that a real witch could go about getting people out of their house?
So there are some traditions surrounding using witchcraft to remove unwanted visitors from your house. And they pretty much all have to do with brooms. The first most basic one is to just go to wherever you keep your broom and turn it upside down. We're assuming that you keep your broom stored with the bristles on the floor. So you just take that broom and you flip it upside down so that the bristles are facing up toward the ceiling. And you don't even have to let your guests see this. But apparently just doing that will signify to your that they just need to go or something. I don't know. It'll help your house kick them the fuck out. I don't know how it works. It's just, it's an old superstition or something.
Cool.
I found it everywhere when I was researching this. It was like what everyone was saying. And I have heard it before. I just don't know where. I read it in a book a long time ago, I swear.
I definitely think I've heard it before, yeah.
There's a couple others, but again, they're all involving brooms, which I think is interesting. So one person, I saw this on Pinterest, they suggested to go get your broom and lean it against a wall near the door. And you can even just let your guests see this, but you just kind of like don't say anything about it, I guess. And it's supposed to signal to them that it's time to go.
Well, I mean, that's...
I don't know, I think that one's interesting.
That would be uncomfortable in general.
I know. Like, what if they ask you why you did that? So another one is you take your broom and you go into another room where the guests can't see you. You point the bristles of the broom toward where the guests are in your house. And you just say a little something about wanting them to leave. And then finally, once you've finally gotten the fuckers out of your house, you sweep the rooms that they were in to keep them from coming back.
Oh, that's really interesting. Brooms are also sometimes referred to in the craft as besoms. Typically, they're used as ritual tools for clearing unwanted energy before casting a circle or doing magical work. They're typically formed of a longer stave with smaller twigs or branches fastened to the bottom, but any broom will do, right? You could go to the dollar store and get a broom, or even that. Do you remember that like Nimbus 2000 toy that like vibrated, but,
yeah.
But your mom took it away because it was a little inappropriate. You could use that if you still got it. I don't particularly use a broom in my craft. I've always wanted to, but I've just never, like, dedicated to that. But essentially, if it's a form of cleansing that you're looking for, you could use salt or salt water, smoke, or my personal favorite way to cleanse is sound. I have a bell that I use to cleanse everything.
I love bells.
I love it. I do it. I cleanse my cards with my bell every single time. I love it. It's my favorite form of cleansing.
I actually use a broom as my favorite form of cleansing.
Really?
I currently have this, it's actually very cool. It has like the bristles of a decent sized broom, but the handle is very small. So it's sort of like a broom that's the size of a wand. And I won it at I won it at a prize giveaway at a pagan pride festival.
Oh, a raffle.
A raffle. Thank you. Yes, I won it in a raffle at a pagan pride festival, and it was handmade by one of the vendors there. And it's easily one of my favorite things. One of my favorite ritual tools.
I love that.
And I also have a larger broom that my roommate made that I will sometimes use. When we do rituals outside... this is so geeky, and I'm so glad that I get to talk about it. So I hope that a lot of you listening have maybe played Final Fantasy X, the video game. So there's this character, Yuna. She dances with her staff to send the spirits onto the afterlife to keep them from becoming monsters when people have died. So I will go out in my backyard with my broom, and I will pretend that I am Yuna and do my own little sending dance.
That's very, like, pop culture witchcrafty of you. I love that. That's great.
That's me, girl.
Misspelled. They have two dads now.
All right, so we're back to the story. All right, so basically at this point, the Charmed Ones have two daddies, which... is not as progressive as it sounds. Their real dad is in the house, and there is a shapeshifter of their dad in the house. Because Victor is willing to let them kill him in order to kill the shapeshifters, they decide that he's the real Victor because he's willing to die.
And Piper notices the ugly ring, and Prue moves it towards Victor, and he puts it on, and they do the spell. Cinda decides that she wants to be the Goblin King one more time before she ends... her days.
That was so no reason. She's about to die and she's like, oh, I better get my mullet on. Which, okay, all right. I'm currently wearing a wig while we're recording, so I'm feeling a little hypocritical right now. Because I guess if I'm gonna do a death scene, I do want to be in a good wig. Which is not to say that Cinda was in a good wig, but you get what I'm saying.
She was not in a good wig.
She was not.
It looked like she was in a wig that had a bang, and they cut the bang off and like put it on top of the wig.
It looked like a hot damn mess. That's what it looked like.
It was not a good wig. She would have gotten red for filth. but they melt in this really weird. In this really weird effect. It does not look great, the melting
This
thing.
Is probably the worst vanquishing effect, hands down, of the whole show. Like, it was bad.
Yeah, I prefer it when it's just fire later on when they just, like, burn up. That's so much better.
But this one was especially bad. Like, it was just...
It's really bad. Daddy drops to his knees, which is where I typically prefer a daddy, so...
God damn it.
The shapeshifters die, and then everything is fine. Victor's not hurt at all, even though he was acting like he was in a lot of pain moments ago.
And then suddenly, like, it's all forgiven now. Like, suddenly it's just like, oh, okay. Prue's like, okay, I'm not mad at you anymore. We're fine.
Okay, chill.
Everything's fine. Whether or not, you know, it was visually stimulating in any way, the point is that three monsters just died right in front of them, and then they sort of have this, like, Oprah talk show, like, makeup kind of moment. Like, we didn't just, like, fucking kill the neighbors.
We committed a triple homicide in front of our father. Let's go out for a picnic.
I know. And then they're just like, oh, I'm really glad you came, Dad. Damn it. Don't take it that way. Okay, so we just gotta wrap this shit up.
So they were gonna go out with their dad, but he bails on them. Surprise, surprise. And then we get this, like, fucking home movie that's terrible. And then Leo shows up. I forgot that Leo was in this episode.
Yeah, so Leo, who of course becomes a series regular, shows up at the end of this episode to just be their handyman. Leo shows up with the message from their dad that he's not coming. And then, like, Phoebe is immediately trying to fuck him to get right into those Levi's.
I mean, can you blame her? Brian Krause looks good.
Like, early Brian Krause is very good, yeah. But anyway, so the episode ends with the sisters watching this Christmas home movie hell that their dad left for them.
Yeah.
It's not good.
It's bad. It's really bad.
But the point is, after all this drama, they finally are cool with their dad, and then he just fucking bails on them again. Like...
We don't see him for, like, a year.
2 years. 2 years.
Wait, is this season 3 that he comes back again?
Yeah.
Oh my god. Yeah. Well, yeah. I get it, because they needed to find an actor that didn't act like he wanted to fuck his daughters.
Right, well, they had to recast him, obviously.
Any final thoughts? Any final thoughts? I'll give you a pair of pennies for your final thoughts.
I have this note that's completely out of context, and I don't know what it means, but I think it really symbolizes what our listeners are thinking after listening to this podcast. It just says... kill us both. So
take me out.
I think that's what I've got for you.
All right, where can the people find you, Siren?
I'm Siren Rex Neenan, and if you want to follow me on the interwebs, you can totally like and follow my Facebook page, Siren Spectacular, Non-Binary Meme Witch. You can also follow me on Twitter, Siren Spectacular, or you can watch my Coven's YouTube channel, Millennial Incantations.
You can follow me on Instagram at Tyler Carson Evans. Keep an eye out on social media for Witch Bitches Review. If you have a question or want to hear us talk about your favorite show, send us an email at witchbereview@gmail.com. And until next time, bye.
Bye.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?